Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Human Progress and How to Win. This is episode 17, titled The Age of Entanglement. VC is a game, no money for startup employees, and the next decade. So, sorry, if you listened to the last episode, I kind of got cut off. I think there is a maximum time limit of 30 minutes with Anchor. I did not know that. I will have to kind of message them on Twitter and verify if that's true. That's actually fine for my podcast. As you guys know, I want to keep them to honestly like 20 minutes. I get on a rant and that doesn't always happen. But I will keep that in mind. I'll try to, you know, I got the time limit timer here to gauge how we're doing. So there was a couple articles that I wanted to get to in the last episode. That's why this episode is kind of definitely before a whole week. And so I just wanted to get this in. So let's start with, the first one, the article from the Long Now Foundation. If you guys aren't familiar, the Long Now Foundation is really, really cool. Just go look them up. They have a lot of projects that they do. It's out in San Francisco, and it's all about long-term thinking, fostering long-term thinking, and I'm all about that. That's kind of why I titled my podcast Human Progress, because this is not about get rich quick, anything like that. This is building technologies that will last, stand the test of time, and that are truly important businesses that will be around for 100 years, let's say, and not just 5 or even 10. The Long Now Foundation. This article is on Medium, and it's called The Age of Entanglement. So you guys probably have heard, the Enlightenment period in different parts of the world, the Enlightenment. So, the scientific exploration and kind of mastering our environment and understanding the world, the natural world. And there is part of that is the age of inventions, too. So science, technology was birthing, ideas are flowing. Now, it was kind of local, though, to your city. But cities were, the birthplace of enlightenments, and coffee shops actually too in those cities. It's rumored coffee shops are coffee in general is so popular because of the caffeine buzz gets people amped up and, they start talking about ideas and sharing, and it was so much more productive than drinking beer all day. So that period of, We are now entering in what they're calling the age of entanglement, and that is the world is becoming so much more connected. So people are now we are a global kind of brain. We are becoming a global consciousness, and our invention not only people but our technologies are becoming somewhat entangled with us. Which is very interesting to note. The smartphone is kind of an extension of ourselves, an extension of our brains, our capacity. And it's only going to continue. It's only going to get even more invasive, more connected. I'm going to kind of read through some of it here. So the age of entanglement is synthetic and comes from putting things together. Oh, and it said, unlike the Enlightenment, where progress was analytic and came from taking things apart. So you kind of scientists would take things apart to understand it as a whole. Well, the age of entanglement is kind of putting it back together and creating our own worlds, creating new worlds, new technologies, and being connected with those. So, very interesting. I like that. Picture the Enlightenment years ago. It says, 55 white men in powdered wigs sitting in a Philadelphia room writing the Constitution. Well, contrast that with an image of a global collaboration that constructed Wikipedia. We all use Wikipedia everywhere in the world, and it's a, this global information source. Very awesome. So, anyways, the article's not very long. I don't know if I'll read more of it. Because I want to get moving on. There may be a couple takeaways. Yeah, and I kind of already said this. You know, further down it says, as we are becoming more entangled with our technologies, we are also becoming more entangled with each other. The power, physical, political, and social, has shifted from comprehensible hierarchies to less intelligible networks. Yes. Instead, we must watch the flows of information, ideas, energy, and matter that connect us, and the network of communication, trust, and distribution that enable these flows. So, preface that, you know, it says we can no longer understand how the world works by breaking it down into loosely connected parts that reflect the hierarchy of physical space or deliberate design. So everything's kind of a network and understanding where it's going. Anyways, yeah, you guys can check it out on your own. Very fascinating article. I love what they do. So yes, let's move on to, yeah, VC is a game. Okay, I saw this tweeted by, I don't know, somebody. Anyways, it's some from this kind of, I don't know, Frontier without the O. So it's Frontier. Some kind of publication. I'm not really sure what it is. And it says Frontier is invite only. So you can register early access at frontier.app. I'm not sure. I don't know. I just saw this article and it was really good. So Frontier, VC, the rules of the game. This essay explores four rules of the VC game based on the ultimate metric being cash on cash returns. So, I don't know. The reason I find this interesting is, like, my first question is, why is VC a game? I just think that the way that it's like this huge competition between all these VCs, it just doesn't seem like we're doing it for the right reasons then. Funding startups, important technologies that are going to change the world. Like, I'm not sure. Anyways, I want to go through the four rules here since we're on the topic. Number one is avoid non-concentrated portfolios. I've heard this time and time again. Like, basically that means there is like one deal, one company, one deal that like returns the fund for the whole entire fund. So let's say you've made 10 investments in a year, in companies. Well, basically only one of them is going to be the big winner. That's going to return all of the money, the returns. That's why it says avoid non-concentrated. So that's why these VCs are only making like two deals every 6 months, whatever, because they're really trying to hit that home run. Number two is avoid consensus. This is kind of like the contrarian idea, you know, finding the company that no one else is talking about or no one else wants to invest in. That's kind of the one to pay attention to. So the consensus of like Airbnb was like, no, this is a really stupid idea. Why would that ever work? And it turns out, obviously, we know how it turned out. So that's kind of that one. Number three is avoid highly profitable companies. This one kind of interested me. Yeah, it seems counterintuitive. Like, wouldn't you want to invest in a highly profitable business? But the reason it's like that's kind of after the fact, though. They're saying like if it's already highly profitable, they're saying, well, it's probably going to die off after so many years. Like, you want to play the long game. So you don't want to invest. So Jeff Lewis, prominent investor, he tweeted, he said, investing in highly profitable businesses is the most unprofitable form of investing. I don't know. Just keep that in mind. It signals a company's past performance, but it does not necessarily signal great future performance. So, and the last one, number four, is avoid short-term investments. It says a couple quotes here. The very best investments are investments that really have staying power and duration as companies for 20 plus years. And then you have Warren Buffett says, our favorite holding period is forever. So yeah, you want, and that, you know, that's what we're about too. And what everyone should be about is finding the companies that are going to stand the test of time. Not these fads, you know, some of these businesses, apps that are starting today, I just don't think are going to be around for very long, but they're getting tons of funding. Anyways, that's a debate for a whole another thing. Let's move on to no money for startup employees. So I came across, this video. I don't know really who he is, kind of an unknown guy. But he's a software engineer. His name is Chris Hawkes, H-A-W-K-E-S. And it just kind of came in my YouTube recommendations. And the title is Software Engineer Salaries Are Hurting Startups. So it just piqued my interest, and I watched it. It's only like 11 minutes, 51 seconds. He had a great message. You know, me being me, I'm not really in the tech world yet, so I don't know exactly how things are going. So that finding things like this is really helpful and useful, like everyday people that are working in tech and understanding what it's really like. It's easy to see kind of the major success stories, but the day-to-day operations and like the average person, you know, yeah, sometimes things aren't going very well for a lot of people. So anyways, he is, I know, in the DC area, and basically the gist of his message was it is hard for startups to recruit talent, engineers and designers, whoever. It's a lot of the times it's like the founders are by themselves and they're trying to hire, but they can't afford these high salaries. And everybody wants the top talent, and that's what makes everything so hard. Is, you know, everyone's looking for the top engineer, you know, and that, but they're all going to the FANG companies that, you know, he talks about, you know, Facebook, Amazon, Apple, Google, and Netflix. FANG is the acronym. And why not? I mean, huge salaries. So he was saying in San Francisco, a couple of these companies are paying $500,000 a year as a salary. Now that's just, now even he said that is still an extraordinary amount, even for San Francisco. The cost of living is so high, yes, but $500,000 a year is just out of this world. And, you know, you're just an employee. You're just coding away at some big company. You know, it's amazing to me. And he's in DC. So most of the other big cities are, you know, it's about 140 to 200K. These salaries are amazing. And it's not just that, it's the stock options. It's the vacations. It's all the amenities and benefits that come along with it. Yeah, it's just really hard to convince people that are in these companies to go to a startup. And he mentioned that even lesser known companies like Verizon and Comcast, he said, are able to afford, you know, they're able to pay very comfortably. So that's a huge issue that startups are facing. And I think about this a lot. You know, I would say as a society, we want more and more startups. We want more innovation. We want people to try new things. But when we're dealing with these high costs of living, demanding high salaries that need to be paid, work's not getting done. Innovation's not happening. Everyone's just going to the FANG companies and helping them out with their dreams. And you know, so it's a very interesting time. And he said kind of at the end, yeah, it's just exciting to see. We'll wait to see what happens. If anything really is going to change, how do we fix this problem? Can't say that I don't have an answer yet either. I think that is a hard problem. You know, it's nice to think about the startups in the trenches, you know, they're on a mission to change how society works in some way. And you know, that ambition, you would think that you could rally a bunch of people around and almost work for free, because it's all about the mission, you know. That's what you'd want humanity to be, that way. I have dreams about that. Like, oh, you know, it'd be so awesome to kind of like, oh man, I don't need pay. You know, I'm working. This startup means everything to me. This could change the world. And you would want the human condition to be like that, but it's just not feasible. You know, you can't work for free. You need money to live, and especially these high cost of living. So anyways, take a look at this video, watch it on your, it's just, you know, just under 12 minutes. It's a quick watch, some food for thought. So anyways, let's move on to the next decade. Okay, so Adam Draper, you've heard me talk about him before. He is at Boost VC Venture Fund. I really like his ideas. He was on the Torenberg podcast, you know, Venture Stories. I think that's how I first heard of him. So he wrote this article. He has this own newsletter, Things I Write, it's called. This one is called The Next Decade. He has some societal predictions, and I like what he, so again, he likes to, let me just read. So I'm fascinating. I'm excited about the future, but the things that I'm fascinated by aren't so much identifying problem, solution, opportunity, but he's fascinated with societal shifts. And that's awesome, because so am I. Like, what are the big things that are going to happen? Well, he made some predictions in kind of bullet points down here. So my societal change predictions, he says. Let me read a couple. I'm not going to read all of them. But the first one here is climate change will be solved by littering the ocean with technology products. So instead of no littering to save the planet, we will be compelled to throw sensors and products into the ocean. Okay, so that's, you know, a lot of like cleanup solutions. So just interesting, you know. Artificial intelligence will create more jobs than ever before in markets we would have never known existed. Rather than believing that AI will replace the jobs of today, there will be more jobs for tomorrow. Awesome. I mean, that's what we want to hear. One more or two more. 50% of surgeries will be done by robots. There will be hospitals built on water to travel to federal waters in order to allow surgeries happen regulatory-wise. Yeah, kind of. He's really kind of big on that seasteading things, you know, kind of self-run governments on the ocean, you know, and yeah, for emergency medical situations, like people that can't get things done because of regulatory issues, you know, take it to the ocean, take it to where there's no jurisdiction. Absolutely. Oh, okay. One more I know. Oh, I love this one. So physical cities will go bankrupt, but digital cities will be full of cash. Okay. So this is my bread and butter. This is literally, you know, because here I am stuck in Indiana. I want to be in San Francisco. But I, you know, you know, with the last video I just said, you know, high cost of living means high salaries to pay one person because companies can only afford one person for the job. But there's so many people left out of that. And if we just take things digital, take things VR, let's just all, like, cities will be in VR. We know you don't ever have to move somewhere. And even, like I said, podcast before, even Mark Zuckerberg is going this way. He wants to do this with Oculus. He wants virtual cities, virtual communities, and for global collaboration. Why not? I mean, it's almost as if, to me, we will look back on, I can't believe I ever got in a car and had to drive it myself. Because eventually self-driving cars will run everything. They'll be everywhere. And, you know, it would be so crazy that we ever drove cars. That's what in hindsight, we're going to look back on that. Same thing with meat consumption. We're going to perfect it, like the Impossible company. Everything will be plant-based. And we'll look back on our lives now and be like, I can't believe we used to slaughter animals so inhumanely for food. And I think the same thing could be said for cities. They're still going to be around, obviously, yes, but the notion, the problem of like I can't believe I had to pick up everything and physically move to San Francisco for a better life, or LA for a better life, New York for a better life. No, there's going to be tons of opportunity that you can do in VR right from your home, wherever you're at, in Indiana, Mississippi, Louisiana. There's just so many states, so many areas that are forgotten about and no longer. We're going to figure this out. Okay. What else do I have? Okay. I think the last one is, well, I had two. I forgot about this. This record break. Okay. This is from the Seeker YouTube channel, really quick. It's a record breaking 3D printer. It's from out of Northwestern University. I think it's called stereo. Yes, they use a process called stereolithography. Printing systems have obstacles with speed and size. Okay, sorry. Okay, let me just read for a second. A team at Northwestern University have cracked the code on how to utilize stereolithography printing systems as an efficient manufacturing tool using their machine HARP, short for High Area Rapid Printing. HARP is a specialized 3D printer. It can create structures the size of a human adult in just a couple of hours. With this technology, we will finally have the fast, precise, and versatile 3D printing device we've been waiting for. Okay, anyways, I don't want to, because we're at the 21-minute mark, I wanted to just, okay, I only have one other thing to talk about, so, yeah, so just take a listen to this. It's only 3 minutes long, 3 minutes like 46 seconds long. So I'm going to include the link, as you know. So just remember HARP, High Area Rapid Printing. If you want to look at it, and maybe I think there's other websites that you can list, you probably can look up. So just, you know, Northwestern University is where this is coming out of. HARP, again, is High Area Rapid Printing, you know, so revolutionary 3D printing. I just want to make you guys aware of this. I didn't want to forget because, yeah, if you guys are in technologies, science like this, you want to be into 3D printing, I think this is one to pay attention to. Northwestern is close to me. So if you're in the Midwest and, again, like I was just kind of talking about, you think that there's no opportunities around here. Well, a lot of the times I think that's the truth, but here we are. This is Chicago area, so try to contact them. Go look at their website. I might try to find a link too and throw it in there, and so you guys don't have to do too much searching. Okay, last but not least, this podcast, Recode Decode, Kara Swisher, you might have seen, this is another kind of Silicon Valley podcast. I like her. I listen to this, a lot, not as often as I used to, but yeah, definitely she has some good guests on. I like her views. I like how kind of harsh she is sometimes. It's pretty funny. She does a good job. So this episode, David Epstein, has a new book out called Range, and subtitle is Why Generalists Triumph in a Specialized World. And the title of the podcast is Why Successful People Don't Do Only One Thing Well. Okay, so basically, really quickly, the gist of it is, and I love this, and that's why I listened to the whole thing, and I knew I was going to like it, because this really describes me. I am not a specialist. It is really hard for me to work on one thing and be really, really good at it. Like coding is never going to be my thing. Even designing for hours is really not going to be my thing. I like to be a generalist. So what they're saying, what he says in his book, and he says, I would think, and that's kind of why investors tend not to be very wealthy, let's just put it that way, for the most part, because they're able to kind of take such a zoomed out approach to the world. They know a little bit about a lot of things, and And that's kind of how I like to be. I like to read about a lot of things, talk about important issues. I'm a curious person, and luckily in his arguments for the book, that tends to be, people who are like that tend to be more successful than the specialized people. Not always the case. Obviously, I think raw talent and practice, I mean, you can't, you know, deny the coding and raw IQ of like Larry and Sergey, or Larry Page and Sergey Brin, and Bill Gates. You can't, because they're kind of specialized people. So like, but I would say, so he's saying more often than not, specialized people will earn less in their lifetime than generalists will. So that's his argument. Now, his book is kind of counter to, I think it's like, be good so they can't ignore you kind of thing. Yeah. It's like directly, and you guys have probably heard that one. That's a popular one. And then the Malcolm Gladwell 10,000 hour rule. So there's obviously arguments for both sides. David Epstein of Range, he really has a lot of research backing up a lot of the claims that are made. So I urge you guys to listen to the whole episode. I think it's under an hour. I want to bring up, like, you know, right now in today's society, we are being pushed so much to be a specialist. You know, because everybody thinks that, okay, you're going to be amazing if you just devote your whole life to coding. If you to one thing, you know, you got to learn this and be the best at it. You got to be the best in the world at this, and this, this one thing. And it can be very discouraging. It can be very hard for people to be like that. And if they're not naturally like that, but it seems to be like we're just pounded all the time, and they talk about this. To be, you know, successful, you have to be good. You have to be the best in the industry that you're in, the best in the world. And it's like, that's such a tall order. And anyways, David Epstein, he's like, no, you don't have to be a generalist, be a lateral thinker, you know, dabble in a lot of different areas, and that's innovation. You're going to come up with great ideas and great insights that people don't see, and you will be successful. So I really like that case. It's really reassuring to someone like me, but we're just about the 28 minute mark. So I'm going to cut it off there, guys. So everyone, again, everything will be included in the description. Like I said, a couple of them are articles, but some things you can reach out to the companies that are mentioned, and see what you can do. Let's win together and create new technologies that will stand the test of time. The next 100 years, 200 years will be around. All right, guys, I will see you in the next episode. So take care.